Food, nutrition, and health. They all seem like necessities which need to be priorities. I use the word seem because while they're looked upon as a priority by you, I hope, and most others, it's becoming increasingly disturbing how the Trump administration Republicans see the need and access to food, nutrition, and health. We've talked about it here on Issues and Ideas about the level of cuts to the SNAP program, which have affected already millions of families. We're now less than 2 months away from even more families being at risk of losing their SNAP benefits. And alternatives for solutions, they're also facing greater challenges. Here to look at the truth and facts about all this is Policy Director with the Children's Defense Fund, Lauren Relaford. Thanks for being here today, Lauren.
No, thank you. Good morning. I'm really excited to be here, excited to particularly be with someone in the New Jersey area because I've got family ties. So it's always good to talk SNAP, but especially with a place that's close to my heart.
Childrensdefense.org, where you learn more about this and other issues of the Children's Defense Fund. And, you know, we're getting into New Jersey a little bit because New Jersey is going to be faced with something that's going to be coming down the pike in less than 2 months now. But just as an overall, Lauren, how important is the SNAP program to families in America?
Oh, SNAP is, I mean, I can't underestimate the importance of SNAP. I think people just think about it as, okay, people receive money for food, but food is medicine. Food is life. And food is a really important part of how we believed, CDF believes, we build a community so every child can grow up with dignity, hope, and joy. And so there's a lot of folks who rely on SNAP to ensure that their kids have what they need to be who they fully are. Full disclosure, I grew up using SNAP, actually before SNAP was SNAP. It was just called food stamps. And I will be very honest, there are times where my brother and I would not have been able to eat had it not been for SNAP. My mother was a full-time student, single mom, taking care of two kids, and that was a vital lifeline for us. And so when people say it's a vital lifeline, they're not being hyperbolic. They really mean that this helps them meet a very basic need. And not only is it meeting a basic need, but it's taking the stress off of worrying how to meet that need off of a parent's shoulder so that way they can fully show up, you know, as parents and really connect with their children on different levels as opposed to just focusing on trying to take care of their children.
And you use the word helps, too, and that's important for people to realize who aren't aware of the facts and reality about the SNAP program. It's not a monumental amount of money going to each family. It's income-based, needs-based. I mean, there's a whole formula that determines it. But when you get down to what the monthly financial amount of food that's needed is, SNAP is paying off a good part of it, but not the entirety of it in most cases.
Right. I mean, you find, like, some people are making, I think it's like, you'll get, like, an average of, you know, $183, depending on where you are. And so when you think about the benefit and you think about the fact that I think a lot of people think that SNAP pays for like all the groceries. It doesn't, right? It certainly pays a good portion of the cost. But when you think about the rising cost of groceries and the fact that, you know, in certain instances, it's only paying a fraction of that, that disparity between what you can afford and how much, you know, how much things cost starts to really place a burden on the individual. And so folks who were using the benefit were already feeling that strain with the rising, you know, grocery prices. But now they're going to feel it even more because they're not going to have access to this vital service because of a law that was passed last year. And so what we really are seeing is the potential for an explosion of, you know, of a hunger crisis really in this country. And we're already seeing it, you know, across the board in states that have had to make these really, really massive cuts as a result of the fact that this bill, I just call it H.R. 1. I think people call it one big beautiful bill, but I think that that's a one big bad bill. But I think those are cutesy names for something that is really going to cause, you know, a crisis in a child's ability to grow up with dignity, hope, and joy. And so when you think about the $187 billion that's been cut over the next decade, we know and we are seeing already that over a million children have actually lost access to SNAP since last July. And that is actually only in 22 states with publicly available data. or states that have been able to share unpublished data. So that's 1.1 million children that have lost SNAP since July 2025 in 22 states. We don't actually know the total loss amongst children, and that loss, like, that's just sort of the, you know, the quantitative bit of it. We don't know how this is actually impacting children, and so unless you go in and talk to communities and have conversations with your neighbors and your family members, you really won't understand the human cost of this until these changes are fully rolled out, and probably a few months after children really start not having access to this vital resource.
And what's coming down, as I was referring to in the introduction, in October, and this was talked about when HR1, and that's what we refer to it here as to, that infantile name is just schoolyard childish frivolity. But the next segment, because if you thought that the worst was over with those first cuts with the change in work requirements and various other elements, now the states are going to be expected to pick up the tab when these next cuts come through. And when you look at New Jersey sitting in a multi-billion dollar deficit, California has the highest total state government debt, $497 billion. And now they're supposed to be able to pick up the tab for what the federal government is not going to be funding anymore. I mean, who thinks this is a good idea?
So what's funny is the members who passed it thought it was a good idea. You know, Children's Defense Fund was really heavily engaged in advocacy against, HR1 last year. And one thing we consistently heard from a lot of folks was, you know, oh, well, the states will be fine. Like, the states can take care of that. And you now see, governors across, the political spectrum, state lawmakers saying, like, no, we cannot do this. And I really appreciate you bringing up the cost of states, because I looked at New Jersey, for example. So New Jersey is now required to cover 5% of SNAP assistance. And 5% seems like a small number, right? But that's actually going to cost the state $100 million per year.
And right now, New Jersey right now is borrowing $40 billion a year. That's as of June 30th, just to pay its various requirements and necessities, not even putting this element into the equation yet.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is that when the states have to cover more, what's going to happen is folks in New Jersey, across the country, but folks in New Jersey are going to see their taxes raised, and or they're going to have to make cuts to other services to make up for what they now have to pay. So when we say other services, that's going to mean cuts to vital child care assistance programs, programs that address, children that are, unhoused, so homeless children, developmental services, education services. And so, even if you are not on SNAP, you are going to be impacted by this federal law, because as a state, or as a resident of New Jersey, services that you may receive are going to be cut, and or most likely, and you're going to see a rise in your taxes. And so it's not just people think like, oh, it's a SNAP issue. Like, I don't deal with it. Those are those people over there. But, when something happens to one person, it impacts everyone, right, in some way. And so everyone in the state is going to feel the impact of this on so many different levels. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the people that are going to be hurt the most are the children, because they are innocent in all of this. They cannot vote. To the extent to which we try to get them engaged in advocacy, we certainly do. But we as adults, and this is what we believe at Children's Defense Fund, is that we have a collective responsibility, a moral and ethical responsibility to our children to make decisions that center them in everything we do. And this is a decision that completely decentered the needs of every child in this country, the needs of every child in New Jersey, for the sake of being able to say, oh, we cut XYZ money from the federal deficit. So that's it, when it could have come from, quite frankly, anywhere else, I think. And that's what's also frustrating, is that this was completely unnecessary. And it's going to hurt so many different people, whether you're on the program or not.
Lauren Relliford, who is Policy Director with the Children's Defense Fund, childrensdefense.org, their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. You bring up the point, too, that this is going to have a ripple effect because when people either have their SNAP benefits cut or run short, what are they going to turn to? Food banks, food pantries, which are already under an historic strain. So many who were donors to these facilities are now in need of what these facilities offer. And again, it's just making a challenging problem even worse than it is. And the excuse for all this is that, well, you know, there's rampant fraud in the SNAP program, and we're eliminating the fraud. Tell that to the family who can't feed their kids tonight.
Yeah. Well, I think when it comes to fraud, I don't think anybody, you know, wherever you sit, is okay with fraud.
No.
I think I feel like the fact that fraud is brought up as an argument, it tries to make it seem like there's one side that's very anti-fraud and there's another side that's okay with it. I don't think anyone is okay with it. But I think the approach is completely different. And if you really are concerned with fraud, then cutting a benefit doesn't help. What would help is working with states and local governments to really understand where there are problems with program service delivery, program service implementation, and addressing it that way versus making these large-scale cuts. There's certainly ways to address fraud, and I think everyone wants to do that to ensure that these programs get to the people that deserve them, and that they're fully effective, and that, you know, if you want to be, you know, from a dollars and cents perspective, that, you know, the dollars are spent well. But making these large-scale cuts without engaging with the states and localities and caring about how this is going to impact them is not the way to combat fraud. Ultimately, you're hurting people and using this fraud narrative as a shield for it when that's not the case here.
After this, well, presumably comes to pass, we can always hope that cooler heads and smarter minds will prevail. Is there a concern that the school meals programs are in the target of these same individuals who are promoting these cuts to SNAP? I've heard over the recent months, Republican members of Congress, Republican politicians at all state and local levels saying, you know, it's not our job to feed your kids.
Yeah, I always have to take a break and a breath when I hear that. Because that, to me, as a member of Congress or as a public servant, that is actually your role. Your role is to help people get what they need to be able to live their best lives. Your role is, especially when it comes to children, to make sure that children have everything that they need to thrive. Your role is to make sure that all young people enjoy regular, nourishing meals and active lives. And to cut food in schools, because that is definitely going to happen. We know that, in particular with this bill, a child will, like, losing SNAP access can result in a child missing out on free school meals, in two different ways. So first, students and households that are on SNAP are automatically eligible for free school meals. So dropping those children off the SNAP rolls ends their eligibility for such nutrition aid. So that means that the 1.1 million children across the country have already lost access to free school meals, and school is starting soon. And in a lot of cases, in a lot of ways, and again, not to personalize it, that meal at school is probably the only meal that a lot of folks get.
Yeah.
Sometimes I knew that, like, you know, the school meal was the most balanced meal, the most full meal that I was going to be able to get. And having a full stomach means that you have a full brain, means that you have an active brain. And so, again, this isn't just about cutting access to food in schools, people aren't thinking about the ripple effects of this. And so, again, if you really care about, say, for example, education, then you also have to care about nutrition, because we know that good nutrition leads to good brain health, leads to good educational outcomes, leads to good lives in the short, medium, and long term for these children. And so now we're going to see children suffering in schools, not just with hunger pains, being unable to focus, being unable to really be themselves, being unable to fully learn. And so it's, again, it's not just about, okay, this is happening in, you know, in a food and hunger space. We have to think about how all of these things are interconnected and how this is then impacting children, not just in the homes, but in their schools and their communities. You brought up food pantries. We saw what happened with food pantries during COVID. They were overrun. You know, it was really hard to keep up supply. And we can't assume that, you know, churches and community centers have the resources necessary to always be able to meet the needs of the people around them, right? And so to say that, oh, the food pantries, they'll take care of that, I think is a real abrogation of duty. And it's a real misunderstanding of the reality on the ground, because that's not going to be the case in many areas, especially rural areas. And so I think the assumption was that, like, again, you know, the states and everyone else will figure it out, but the states have not figured it out. And we see that in them, you know, emailing and calling and asking Congress to make some changes, to delay some things, you know, to do anything, to pass a law that would put the money back in. Because they realize that a disaster is not just coming for our children. A disaster is here. It has arrived, and it's creating just such horror for such a young person who sees the world and sees the possibility, and then they have the world telling them that you don't matter, that you don't deserve, and, you know, we're not going to help you. And that's going to do such harm to them and their ability to see themselves as someone who is worthy, deserving, and someone who can make themselves, their families, their communities, and the world.
That's important, too. And I think better to word it as they're aiming at our kids. They're trying to hurt our kids. And for you listening, if that doesn't bother you, that doesn't anger you, then you need to really stare in the mirror and reassess who you are. Now, I know that there are fair hearing processes, if you lose your SNAP benefits, that you can go through as an individual, and, you know, we can hope for political change in November. But in the more immediate, what should people be doing right now? What can people do right now to say, no, you don't aim your greed, your selfishness, your heartlessness at my kid?
Yeah, so there's so many different ways. One, I think it's just continue to educate yourself about what is really going on here. Continue educating yourself about what the program is, what the program actually does. In New Jersey, SNAP actually serves 800,000 folks, and a little over half of those are children. And so one, you know, understand that, like, this is a massive problem. There's in your own state. Two, all members in the House of Representatives are up for re-election this coming November. And we are now in August, and what they call this period August recess. So it's a period in which all members of Congress go home and they do in-district work. And because it's a campaign season, they're really trying to get in with their constituents. So hold town halls, go to the district office. You know, you can go to House.gov or Senate.gov, put in your zip code, find out who your member of Congress is. You know, in New Jersey, it's pretty easy. You guys, you know, you've only got two senators and they cover the whole state. Call them, write letters, activate, engage, tell your story. You know, bring those stories to those members of Congress. And if they don't listen, still publicize it. You know, use your social media, write letters to your state lawmakers, encourage them to contact their, you know, federal counterparts and let them know what's really going on. You know, if you can, then, you know, not just engage, but, like, if you are in the position, also just donate to food banks. I've actually seen people, I'm in Maryland right now, I've actually seen people, instead of setting up the little libraries, they're setting up little pantries in front of their homes. And so there's the big sort of macro sense of getting engaged and reaching out to your members of Congress and taking advantage of this vital period in August recess where members are home and they should want to hear from their constituents. But also, like, think about what are your community needs. Get to know your neighbor. Talk to your neighbor. Talk to them. Like, hey, what are some of the challenges that you're having? Like, what are some of the fears that you have as a parent as it relates to this? And how can we meet each other's needs? Because I think that that's also going to be important, is a lot of these things are intended to divide people, create others, create this sense of, you know, there's people that deserve versus not deserve. And coming together as a community on behalf of kids. So again, what CDF says, we build community so every child can grow up with dignity, hope, and joy. Build community within your neighborhoods. Build community within, you know, your civic centers. Identify ways to help meet people's needs. And then go out and, you know, raise your voice. Let your members know. Let your state lawmakers know that, like, we need them to say something. Let your governors know, hey, you have to tell these members that the states cannot cover that, and we need to work together on a fix. Members of Congress have, you know, until about mid-October to potentially do something to address this issue if they were going to do something legislatively. We know that they can work really fast if they want to, and there's certainly advocacy communities that have urged them to address this issue to create space for some of these cost-sharing issues. And so, you know, lean in. Lean in is all I can really say. Find ways to meet people where they are and push the people in power to do what they're supposed to do, because it's their responsibility. They are a public servant. When you enter public service, that means that you are doing this not on behalf of your own personal edification or power. You're doing this because you see this as an opportunity to better the lives of a child in your community at a large scale. And so call them to that and remind them of their duty, their moral, ethical, and economic responsibility that they have to every child in their district, that something must be done, because if not, you cannot call yourself a public servant, because you're not serving the public, you're serving yourself.
For you listening, it boils down to two steps that you have to take. It sounds like we put a lot in front of you, put a lot in your head. One, give a damn. Two, raise your voice. You do it on your own. Others see you and hear you. They join you, and we have the effort to push back in every way possible from keeping this disaster. And that's exactly what it is, a disaster that's aimed at our children from happening further than it already has, by the way. Learn more about this issue and the other points of focus with the Children's Defense Fund, their website, childrensdefense.org. She is their policy director, Lauren Relaford. Lauren, thanks for the truth, the facts, reality, and for the motivation for people listening to say, no, this isn't going to happen, and I'm doing everything I can so it doesn't happen. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Chris, so much.